What is up, ladies and gentlemen? This is The Huddle. Thanks for joining us. We are coming to you live from Lenoxville on CJMQ 88.9 The Cube. I'm here with Nathan Walker and Stone Sousa. Guys, how's it going?
Good. Really good, Zach. How's
it going?
Great day.
Hey, I'm so excited for this show. Being that it's our second to last show all together, kind of sad, but we have big debates coming up. We're going to be talking NBA playoffs, giving our picks for Rookie of the Year in the NBA, and finally, we'll be debating who is the greatest quarterback of all time in the NFL. But in other news, we have Dez Bryant was released by the Cowboys today. I thought it was coming. I kind of saw it coming, but shocker for some of you. What do you guys think? Was that a good move by the Cowboys?
The money that he was making is too much, and his production doesn't like meet the money that he's making. He's getting paid like a number one receiver, and he's playing like a number two.
Absolutely. It wasn't much news. It's something that was sort of speculated throughout the couple of months with free agency. But like Stone said, he was getting paid high-end money like he was an elite receiver, and he just didn't show out. So in order for the Dallas Cowboys to see what they found fit, they had to let him go.
Exactly.
And the only reason why this took so long is because Jerry Jones. You know the Cowboys love to drag out, love to make a spectacle of it. If this was any other team, he'd be long gone by now.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's going to be exciting to see where he goes next, though.
Yeah, and finally, if the Cowboys want to build that franchise around Dak Prescott, they needed that cap space. They had to let him go. So, yeah, I think that was a good move for the Cowboys. In other news, Russell Westbrook, Mr. Triple-Double, averaged a triple-double for the second season in a row. So, he got MVP last year because he averaged a triple-double. Should he get MVP this year?
No, the only reason why he got that last year is because he broke the record for most triple-doubles in the season. This year he had 25, and if he got 43, I think he'd definitely be in the discussion.
Again, absolutely. Yeah. It's really impressive to see someone that actually went and did something that we've never seen in the NBA happen before, someone averaging multiple seasons of having a triple-double. But hey, as my boy Carmelo says, he steals.
He's actually boxing out Carmelo to get those rebounds.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, but just... I mean, we all know Russell Westbrook's a great player, but I just want to touch on his effort night in, night out. He's the only guy in the NBA that, like, you know, he's coming all out every night. You see guys, you know, take nights off. He doesn't care what night it is. It could be Christmas. It could be Thanksgiving. You're still getting the same effort day one to day 365.
No, yeah.
I mean, it's phenomenal.
Despite his flaws and, you know, all the little things that we may speculate about his play and, you know, what type of player that we think he should evolve to, effort is one thing that sometimes you just can't teach in an individual, and Russell Westbrook shows that day
in, day out.
Especially
since he just got paid to see that same effort. So yeah. It's great.
So
hats off to Russell.
Now that the season's over, who's our MVP? Who do you guys have for MVP?
I got Harden.
James Harden.
Like Kobe said, what more does he got to do? Average 40, 15, and 15? I mean, it's Harden this year.
No,
sorry to LeBron fans, but, you know, it's Harden.
I honestly have to go with LeBron because, again, I feel like I'm a broken record here. When I talk about value, value is value. Take LeBron off this team, the Cavs aren't sniffing the playoffs.
Sniffing the lottery.
Yeah, exactly. That's what they're doing. They're playing the lottery next year. So for me, I see LeBron's my MVP, but I think it's just the LeBron and Jordan effect. You know, when you're good for so long, people just get kind of bored. They want the stories. And Harden's always been number two for all these past years. I think it's going to be Harden because it's his turn, kind of, which I find kind of disappointing.
I see it sort of differently. I sort of see it in the fact that James Harden has kept his team afloat this whole time. They've been above water, and they've been cruising nicely for the whole year. So maybe it's the fact that people are used to seeing Houston not having any type of inconsistency, and they see LeBron carry his team from bottom up, that they think that LeBron should deserve it.
And especially because Houston this year, with Chris Paul coming, people didn't really know if him and Chris Paul are actually going to work. And to see that mesh together, the chemistry, it's been great all season. And I think that hats off to Harden for, you know, allowing Chris Paul to play his game and still being able Harden to play his style of game as well.
Doing less with more.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about these NBA playoffs. Like I said, season just finished. The NBA playoffs are starting tomorrow.
Absolutely.
So let's go through our matchups. Who do you guys have in the first round? Let's start with the West.
Well, first round matchup, 1 versus 8, we have the Minnesota Timberwolves who are going to be playing against the Houston Rockets. Personally, like no one else, you know, I'm not taking the Timberwolves. I'll definitely take the Houston Rockets, and I take them in 4. I think even though the Timberwolves have people back, like Jimmy Butler, but realistically,
their defense is very shaky.
No, yeah, exactly. The last time this team was in the playoffs, like, Vince Carter was still a Raptor.
I was in elementary school.
You know what I mean? So, I don't know. I just think that they still have some growing to do and some experiences to go through. But Houston's looking way too good right now to even, for me, even think they'd lose a game to these
guys. So is Harden not paying off in the playoffs? Is that done? Is he going to turn
it up? I don't
know.
That's why I say Houston, in five. I think Minnesota,
yeah, I'll give it
talent,
a gentleman sweep.
Because
yeah.
Jimmy Butler, Karl-Anthony Towns are superstars. Let's tell how it is. Those guys, and Jimmy Butler was leading the Bulls a few years ago, and now Karl-Anthony Towns is arguably a top 10 player in the league. I mean, those two guys can definitely steal a game at home, especially because you know when teams come home, like Minnesota in the playoffs, haven't been in since 2004. Those fans are going to be all over Houston when they come to Target or wherever they play that night. So I think it's going to be a gentleman's sweep, five games. But I hope James Harden doesn't have a disappearing act again, for his sake. Mm.
And then here we go with our second versus seventh seed. We have Golden State going against the San Antonio Spurs. Personally, I think San Antonio takes a game.
Upset.
I think they take a game.
Okay.
They take a game.
A game.
Here we go.
Ooh, okay,
some people actually think Golden State might lose without Steph.
I want to say this. If Kawhi comes back, San Antonio wins.
I don't think Kawhi's coming back, but I still think that someone like LaMarcus Aldridge is going to be a problem, especially with Golden State still not sure where Steph's at and how he's going to be. So realistically speaking, I think Golden State takes it in about five. If worst case scenario, maybe six.
I say four, because LaMarcus Aldridge last year was horrendous. I know you're a San Antonio supporter. And LaMarcus Aldridge was garbage. I mean, he was Oladipo worthy last year. I mean, it was bad. But you know, like James, we always knock James Harden, so hopefully these guys have bounced back and have a great postseason.
And with the absence of Kawhi, I think LaMarcus is really going to show his full potential.
We can't knock Pop.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. You know, Greg Popovich doesn't really lose in the first round. So that's why I think Golden State is still going to pull through and win. At the end of the day, they have four All-Stars,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be in six. I think we're going to have more of a series in this one.
Be more competitive than people think.
Yeah, definitely.
Sure. And then in our next matchup, we have the
Trailblazers and the Pelicans.
That, I think, is going to be a really
good
series.
Damian Lillard, Jimmy McCollum.
I think they take it in five, being the Trailblazers. I think that obviously is going to be a difficulty holding down someone like Anthony Davis. He's a generational talent, and they really don't have any bigs that can really play with him. At the same time, the Trailblazers do have CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard, and those guys are absolutely dominant on the offensive end.
And Nurkic is playing well too. The only thing is, I would have to say it goes to six or seven because Portland has finished this season horrendously. I mean, their Twitter account's like, can't wait for the next game. What a skid. Like, it's crazy. This team has just not finished the season strong. And, you know, that carries over to the playoffs because you see teams, like, getting bored. And, you know, sometimes that affects how they play in the playoffs. One game here in the playoffs could mean the difference between you moving on or you going home.
No, yeah, my whole thing is just let's not forget that Damian Lillard, despite the slump that they went in, is still an MVP caliber type player.
Yep. And he's one of the most clutchest players in the NBA. Like, fourth quarter is Dame time.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then exactly. Our four versus five, we got OKC and Utah. I think this is going to be
the
longest
series.
This is going to be a great series. Yeah.
This one, I think OKC wins in seven.
I agree with Nate.
I think the only reason why OKC wins in seven is just the fact that Utah, again, is a very young team being led by a rookie. And it'd be an embarrassment, I think, if they even lost the series, no matter how many games it took them.
If OKC loses against Utah, yeah, like you said it, that'd be an embarrassment. Because, even if they make it to seven games, because, you have two Hall of Famers, one All-Star playing against
Steven
a team
Adams.
That's being led by a 19-year-old in Donovan Mitchell. If that goes to seven, that's going to be embarrassing for OKC.
Yeah,
but
if they lose, it's Oklahoma City.
Oklahoma City. I like that one.
Yeah. But I think Oklahoma takes in seven as well. I think Utah, hats off to them. They were not expected to make the playoffs this year. To finish four is phenomenal. Great drafting, great coaching by Quinn Snyder. But I think Oklahoma City just has more star power, which matters more in the NBA playoffs. And those... Russell Westbrook's been to four conference finals and an NBA finals, so knows what it takes to get there.
All right, so we all agree for the West. Now let's go to the East. Number one against number eight, Toronto.
Hey,
Nate.
Against the Wizards.
Hey, Toronto against the Wizards. I'm a hometown boy. I'm going with the Raptors, of course. And I go with the Raptors in four. I think the Raptors are actually going to sweep them. Just for the fact that, yes, John Wall did come back, but they did now they lost Otto Porter. So where is the team going to head now? I think that Gertok isn't going to have that great of a game. We got to remember that Toronto does have a bench in comparison to Washington, and they have a lot of a bench, especially on the big end. You have Siakam, you have Poeltl, you have Van. You know, they have guys coming off the bench who have had significant playing time, and that's the thing. These guys aren't they're not coming in cold. They've had experience throughout the year, and I think with the top five offense and defense, they should absolutely sweep the Washington Wizards.
Here we go. Wizards. I got Wizards in seven.
Oh, wow. Really?
I think John Wall and Bradley Beal are going to show up, and Toronto, overrated as they are, see ya.
Overrated?
What have the Raptors done in the playoffs?
What has John Wall done in the playoffs?
He's about to show you right now when they beat the Raptors.
Come on.
No, man. I'm 100% taking the Raptors. I'm taking the Raptors in five. I'm saying gentlemen sweep. I think they are what they've shown all season. I'm trusting the Raptors. They're not baby dinosaurs.
We'll put them in the James Harden, LaMarcus Aldridge category. We need to see it. I need to see it to believe it.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel the same way about your prediction right now, because John Wall and Bradley Beal, as great as they might be in the regular season, have yet to shown us anything in the postseason.
All right, going here. This is an interesting one too. Boston against the Milwaukee.
I got the Bucks, because I think without Kyrie, Gordon Hayward, I think the Bucks are just too strong. Eric Bledsoe, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Jabari Parker, Thon Maker, those are all studs. And, you know, they obviously had a coaching change, but I think Giannis is going to step up in the playoffs and at least lead them to a first-round victory. I think it goes into about 5-6. I don't think it's a sweep.
I think it's going to be a long series.
I think the same result. I go with the Bucks taking this one, but I go with the Bucks in seven. Only for the fact
I'm
that...
I'm Bucks in seven, too.
Yeah, I say 6 or 7.
Only for the fact that the Bucks still are a very young team. They have flaws. They have no playoff experience, really. And realistically speaking, despite Boston and having the losses, they still have great defense and an amazing coach. So I think that they're going to sort of drag this one out, but I ultimately would go with Milwaukee in seven.
I also just want to touch on Boston's part. These guys have been playing without Kyrie and Gordon Hayward for most of the season, so they already know how to play together. It's not like these guys are coming in we gotta build chemistry right now. These guys know how to play together, so it definitely could be a very interesting series.
Yeah, and one thing I can say about Boston is watch out for them next year, because when you bring Kyrie and Gordon Hayward back, they're going to be dangerous in the East. Next, let's talk about these Philadelphia 76ers against the Miami Heat.
Oof.
No Joel Embiid, mind you that, unless he comes back. But
now, see, if Joel Embiid comes back,
that's a sweep.
I don't think it's... Ooh, a sweep?
If Joel Embiid comes back, that's a sweep.
A sweep? Yeah. No,
Embiid, I think it's 6 or 7.
No.
Miami is scrappy. I mean, they are the scrappiest team in the league. Basically no all-stars. Goran Dragic was an all-star, so I don't really count that. But great coaching, very scrappy. They will defend you from the first minute to the last minute.
See, and I'm going with the Sixers, but I'm going with the Sixers in six. I think that one flaw, despite all the great success they've had, the win streak they've been on, for the most part during this win streak, have beaten mediocre to below average teams. Like you said, Miami's a really scrappy squad, but also it's a very experienced squad. Yeah. There's a lot of veterans on that side of the ball, despite them being all-stars or not, who have had playoff experience, and they know what it's like to play in this type of NBA environment.
With Joel Embiid, they sweep. Without Joel Embiid, it goes to about 6 or 7. And I also wanted to touch on Nate's part. Nate, you always talk about playoff experience. I don't remember the Sixers ever being in the playoffs recently.
So. Not a chance. Not since AI.
Yeah.
No, I'm taking 76ers sweep. And then we have Cavs against the Pacers. I'm going sweep.
Yeah, I got Cavs in three.
Three.
That's how easy this series is going to be.
I don't know. A little part of me thinks that the Cavs are going to win, but they're going to win in five. I think it might be a bit of a gentleman's sweep, just for the fact that, again, sometimes you do have slumps, and this is a new vamped Cavs team that we haven't seen under the pressure like we've seen now. And I think that Victor Oladipo, I don't know, may have a monster game one game, and they squeeze one out. Granted, in no way do I think Indiana's going to win by a margin greater than 7, not even. But hey, I think Indiana may squeeze one out, but then LeBron's gonna come in with the rest of the squad and clean it out.
Yeah, I just want to tell, I think if Indiana does steal a game, it's because they're getting tired of seeing the Cavs in the playoffs and going home in the first round. Like how unfortunate for them is they, regardless, they play hard all season, they get the playoffs, got LeBron first round, wonderful. Thanks for coming out, thanks for an easy sweep, see you later.
Yeah, all right, let's fast forward in these playoffs. So I want you guys to name me, who do you have in the conference finals for East and the West, and who you have coming out, and then who's your champion? So, personally, I have in the West Houston against Golden State.
I'd have to agree with that. I'd
absolutely. With that. The same here.
Same thing.
Yeah, and then after that in the East, I have Cleveland and Philly.
Yep.
So I think we're all in the same.
I can't say Raptors because I picked Washington, so I got to go with yours.
The Sixers are going to be playing against those baby dinosaurs.
Whoa,
man.
No Cavs?
No Cavs.
What?
Whoa, no Cavs.
Whoa. So Toronto's beating Cleveland.
I think Toronto's going to beat Cleveland eventually.
Do you forget the Blasphemy. LeBron the LeBron James?
Oh, I remember. Okay, I remember. Sure. I absolutely remember. Out. But every squad eventually has that hump that they got
to
get over.
I want to send this to LeBron. He's going to sweep the Toronto Raptors if he hears this.
No. First, I think that Despite LeBron,
I think they're ready to sweep the Raptors regardless.
Despite LeBron, I think this is going to be an elongated series. I think this is going to be something that might go down to the wire. And I think just like you were saying, Stone, with Indiana and them going against LeBron, and you know they might squeeze out again because they've had enough. Toronto's had enough. Yeah. I think that
Toronto doesn't want to play LeBron.
No, they don't want to, but if they have to, they got to, right?
You know what else I've had enough of? Kyle Lowry choking in the playoffs.
Oh my goodness, I'm completely
done with this guy. Like, I don't know what he's on. If he shows up, hats off to him. But until I see something, I'm not believing in the Raptors.
My only rebuttal to that is just the fact that Kyle Lowry hasn't had a significant backup like he has in Fred VanVleet this year. I think that Fred VanVleet is someone that, despite if Kyle Lowry does or doesn't get into a slump, Fred VanVleet is capable enough for the Raptors are going to trust him and able to put him on the court and expect somewhat of the same production from him. Obviously, not to the same degree. He's not as good as a shooter. But I do think that, you got to remember, it's a top five offense, top five defense. Yeah. And personally, I think Dwayne Casey is one of the best coaches in the league
now. I also want to touch on if Serge Ibaka needs to show up and score some points. Because if he doesn't score, he's getting paid $20 million. I expect some production on the court. Like, if I'm getting paid $20 million, I'll put up 20. But I mean, you know, he's got, every time he puts up more than 10, the Raptors are winning games. When he's held under 10, they're not winning anything.
So, I mean, he's a
big X factor. Also, sorry, just to touch on one quick thing. I think watch out for Oklahoma City. I think this year, they could, without Steph Curry on Golden State, they can make a run. I think they got talent. Paul George, especially with the way they were playing against Memphis. I know it was Memphis, but they were like lights out.
So I don't buy that. I don't buy it.
I'm a big believer in Russ. You know, I got to trust my guy. And, you know, one of these years, I hope he gets a ring.
All right. So who do we have in the finals? Nate, who do you have? Are the Raptors going to the finals?
I got in the finals like I've been saying all year long. My final prediction is going to be Houston against the Raptors.
Oh, wow.
No. I think Houston is going to end up beating Golden State despite whether they have all the guys back, because we all know that eventually when it comes to playoff sports, guys come back without being fully recovered.
And
I think that's what's going to happen with Golden State, and I think that their true colors are going to get exposed.
It's another one. Golden State Cavs.
Yep.
Yeah, that's how until I see James Harden actually do something in the playoffs without turning the ball over 14 times a game, I can't believe in the guy. No offense. I know he's going to be MVP. Great regular season. But, guys, I care about what's in the playoffs. And Golden State's proven to me they can win. Cleveland has an easy path to the finals. Sorry, Nate. The Raptors are providing no resistance there. So I think it's going to be Golden State Cavs, and I think Golden State wins again.
Wow, really? Okay. So, personally, I have Houston and Cleveland because Golden State, it just everything that's been going on this year just seems like it's not their year.
It seems like a Patriots type of deal. You know, when they get to the playoffs, they got the Super Bowl. It's like so many distractions at this point. Like, it's just one thing after another. Then, you know, at some point, it's just going to blow up.
Exactly. And Steph is going to come back. And how's he going to come back?
That's a big question mark.
So I have Houston and Cleveland. And honestly, I think Houston's going to win if they play Cleveland. And this is all putting my money on Harden won't crumble in the playoffs.
And Chris Paul, too. Yeah. Let's not forget about that either.
That they will be the same team that we've been seeing all year. The thing is that I don't think that there's LeBron, but all the rest, and especially the bench, I don't think the Cavs bench can compete with Houston's bench.
No, I don't either.
I just want to touch on the bench part of things, because Houston is the deepest team in the NBA, and I don't know, you're going for the Raptors. They got one of the best benches in the NBA, too. So I think the benches, expanding the rotation, getting guys some more minutes, keeping like your stars fresh, that might play a big role in determining who goes to the finals.
Longevity plays a big role in the game.
Yep, 100%. And look, I'm saying that my prediction is Houston, but I am rooting for the Cavs. I'm rooting for LeBron. I'm rooting for interesting. You know, I want a story.
I want interesting. There we
exactly.
go.
Exactly. I'm rooting for the new.
I want to see something else happen. I want to see something shock the
world.
You're
the underdog, ain't it? You're still sticking to that.
Hey, you're the underdog.
All right, so let's talk about, and stay in the NBA, but talk about Rookie of the Year.
What a race it's been this year.
Been crazy.
You know, we were arguing about this last year. It was Ben Simmons, hands down. I don't think anybody was even close.
For sure.
And Donovan Mitchell, the way he's played, I mean, he very well deserves the award, too. So I just want to point out, whoever wins the award, no arguments here for me. I hope they do a co-MVP, because I think both of them equally deserve it.
I personally don't hope they do a co at all. But if I just had to add in one point, Ben Simmons, don't act like you don't see Donovan Mitchell out here balling.
They asked
Ben Simmons.
He knows.
Which other rookie he's gotten a chance to see and who else has impressed
him.
Who caught his eye? And he said, no one. Don't lie to the public.
Well, you know,
you've seen Donovan Mitchell like we've all seen Donovan Mitchell.
You know, that's half right, Nate, because there's no other rookie in Ben Simmons' class that had a year off and is coming back.
Absolutely.
So, you know, he is right. Like, in that sense. Not in the sense like who's impressed him, but in that sense, he is absolutely,
absolutely
right.
But he knew the premise of the question, and he knew exactly what they were asking, and that answer did not come up to par. But personally, I go with Donovan Mitchell. I think Donovan Mitchell has been a guy who's been a great story.
Overlooked, too.
Absolutely. Overlooked. Wasn't really seen as a top prospect. No one even talked about him come draft day.
Yeah, hold on. I just want to jump in for a quick second. Utah traded up to get him. So let's give hats off to Utah for seeing a special talent like
huge
that.
Huge move.
Absolutely. So, and they got back their return. Like, look at it. Donovan Mitchell is the first player to lead his team to the playoffs while leading them in scoring since Carmelo Anthony. And that's a Hall of Famer that we're talking about.
When Melo was in Denver, too.
Absolutely. So I think that Donovan Mitchell is a special talent. He's taking a big team who really hasn't done much. We thought that with Gordon Hayward gone that they really weren't going to do anything.
And a better record.
Yeah, exactly. And they came back stronger and better than ever. So I think Donovan Mitchell is my choice for rookie of the year.
I just want to add on to that. Like, Donovan Mitchell made Rodney Hood expendable. Because I remember before they were talking about Rodney Hood, like, this guy's a steal. Now he's playing with LeBron. Yeah. You think if Donovan Mitchell's not there, Rodney Hood's there. And he's the Donovan Mitchell. He's obviously not the same type of player, but he's still being Utah. Just want to talk about Ben Simmons. I think Ben Simmons is my pick, but I have no complaints with that. I think, whoever wins it deserves it. But Ben Simmons, Philly was garbage last year. Obviously, he wasn't playing, but this year he's been playing phenomenally. You know, almost averaging a triple-double in his rookie season, you know, quotes.
Yeah, quotes.
Yeah, but I mean, he's got the only problem that I have, the only knock against him, is he has a lot of talent around him. He's got Embiid, he's got Markelle Fultz coming back, averaging a triple-double in what, his third game back. And Utah only has Rudy Gobert and a bunch of, you know, role players, like absolute role. I don't even think anybody can name anybody else on Utah other than Rudy Gobert. Maybe Ricky Rubio, but that's about it. So either way, I think Ben Simmons, just the way he's played this year, obviously he doesn't have a jumper, but he's just bringing the team together. He's that glue, you know, that Philly needs.
Yeah, like for me, I'm going with Donovan Mitchell. But again, I think there's no wrong answer to this one. Would I mind a co-rookie? Not really, because Ben Simmons is technically in his second year, but he's still a rookie. So it's kind of like in 2005, I think, when Ovechkin was there during the lockdown in the NHL, and then Sidney Crosby came in. Ovechkin won, but he had 1 year experience. So that comes into play. But at the end of the day, I'm going with Donovan Mitchell because just what he's done being a 19-year-old, leading his team to the fourth seed in the West. And at the end of the day, the Western Conference is solid compared to the East.
Yeah, the East is pretty weak. That's another knock. The other thing, actually, sorry.
And no, the way I sort of look at it, obviously Ben Simmons, absolutely an exceptional talent. But again, for no fault of his own, I still knock him for the fact that this isn't actually his rookie season.
He's been, the NBA. Like he's seen what it is,
If you're collecting a professional check, you're doing professional practices, going against professional guys, you are therefore, in my eyes, a professional.
Donovan Mitchell just said, he's like, if you have an exam June 1st and you have a year to prepare for it, the guy who's had a year to prepare for it is going to be more prepared for the test than the 100%. Guy who comes in a month before. Also want to add on, NBA voters for this rookie of the year have experience with this type of situation. Joel Embiid last year was not a rookie, and he was considered hands-down rookie of the year. But who won it? A rookie.
Yeah.
Malcolm Brogdon, a second-round pick, first ever to win first second-rounder to ever win rookie of the year. So I think you could see voters this year be like, you know what, like Nate said, this guy's a professional. He knows what it takes. He's had a year off. Don Mitchell's coming in. No one picked Utah to go to the playoffs. Their fans were booing Gordon Hayward. Now they don't even remember his name. I mean, Don Mitchell's provided life in Utah. People are talking about Utah. There's media coverage now. So I think if Don Mitchell wins, hats off to him. What a special player.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah, taking nothing away from Ben Simmons, because I do think he's going to be a generational player. As soon as he gets a jump shot, he could be...
Scary.
Exactly.
Next could LeBron. Be, but next LeBron.
100%. He could be an MVP, hands down, if he finds that jumper.
If we're just going out this year, like I said, I think it's Ben Simmons. But again, you guys provide a very
compelling
argument.
Just because of the fact that it's his second year, I'm just... They're both great players, but for me, Donovan is just more deserving this year because he is a 19-year-old.
And if we're going off precedent, we've seen it before, like I said, I think the guys will vote for Donovan Mitchell in the end.
Yep, definitely.
All right, so next we are going to talk the greatest quarterback of all time, other known as the GOAT, next on The Huddle.
Take us anywhere, from your home, in your car, and everywhere. CJMQ.FM.
All right, we are back, and Ryan, how's it going?
I've never been better. I'm so excited to finally talk about this argument on a platform where other people can hear me. I've argued this my entire life, so I'm ready to do it.
All right, so we are talking about the greatest quarterback of all time, who it's going to be. So we're going to start. It's going to be a structured debate. We're going to be smart about this. So we're going to start just going around the table saying, who do you think is the greatest of all time? And quick reason why. So obviously, it's no surprise to anyone, I'm going with Tom Brady. Because, first of all, I feel just all the hate that Tom Brady has, he's been going through all these years, it just shows how dominant he's been. People are just sick of seeing Tom Brady win. Kind of reminds me like LeBron in the NBA. Everybody hates LeBron just because he's been dominating. But then, here goes the list. Tom Brady has the most regular season and playoff wins ever in the NFL. He has the most divisional titles ever. Most playoff touchdowns, most playoff passing yards, most Super Bowl wins and appearances, most Super Bowl MVPs, most Super Bowl touchdown passes, most Super Bowl passing yards. So, for me, a quarterback is that guy who's going to get me a ring. Tom Brady has five. Tom Brady is the GOAT.
And that's where we disagree. And I think that makes it a lot clearer in my eyes to why we do always have this argument. Because to me, it isn't all about wins. And it's not all about rings when you're talking about who's the greatest player of all time. When it comes to football, I think basketball is a little bit different because one player can have such an impact. But when it comes to football, winning truly is a team effort. It takes a whole team, a good team, to win. And I mean, we all say it all the time. I know Nate lives by this. Defense wins championships. So to me, it's not just all about that. So when I look at who the greatest quarterback of all time is, and again, this might not be a surprise to the viewers at this point either, knowing that I'm a Colts fan, but I'm going with my guy, Peyton Manning. And the reason I say that is because when you look at careers as wholes, and not just in playoffs and not just in Super Bowls, Peyton's that guy. Peyton has the most MVPs ever by any player in the history of the NFL. He has the record for most passing touchdowns in a season, the most passing yards in a season. And then you look at career, he has the most touchdowns ever thrown by any quarterback, the most yards ever by any quarterback. He has the largest touchdown to interception differential. He's a two-time Offensive Player of the Year. He won Comeback Player of the year after he had his neck surgery. He's a seven-time first-team All-Pro. And, I mean, to me, that's the definition of the greatest of all time. Peyton Manning's got it all.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am Nathan Walker, and I think that the greatest quarterback goes by the name of Joseph Clifford Montana Jr. Joe Cool, the Comeback Kid. Joe Montana. I think Joe Montana is the greatest quarterback of all time. Call me nostalgic if you want, but I think that
Nate's an old soul.
I think Joe Montana has a mix of what both you guys are arguing for, both of your quarterbacks. Joe Montana not only has the jewelry to account for what he's accomplished as a team player, but he also has the individual stat line as well. Joe Montana has been to four Super Bowls, three Super Bowl MVPs, eight-time Pro Bowler, three-time first-team All-Pro, two-time second-team All-Pro, two MVPs, which, not to mention, were both back-to-back, something that's only been done by only four players in NFL history. So that shows consistency. Not only to mention, he has Comeback Player of the Year, he led the NFL in passing twice, he led them in NFL touchdowns twice, and he's made all-decade and all-university teams. Not to mention, obviously, because he's had a career that was before these guys' times, he's already a Hall of Famer, which shows that he is already that guy. No one can ever deny what Joe Montana brings to the table, but I think that as of right now, the other two quarterbacks just don't live up as much to Joe Montana.
All right, so let me get into this. When I compare Brady and Montana, it was always, before the conversation was always, Joe Montana's the GOAT because he won four Super Bowls. And then Brady won four Super Bowls, but then it was, yeah, but Joe Montana is 4-0. But for me, 4-0 just means that you didn't make it to the Super Bowl more than four times. Brady's been to the Super Bowl twice as much as Joe Montana. And look, Brady has five more Pro Bowls, five rings beats four. Brady has that full Hannah rings. You talk about jewelry. And at the end of the day, Joe Montana had arguably the greatest offensive mind and head coach of all time. And not only that, he had the greatest receiver of all time in Jerry Rice. And when you want to, you could say, oh yeah, Brady had Randy Moss. Brady had Randy Moss for one season. And what'd they do? Perfect season. And they broke the record for most touchdown receptions and most throwing touchdowns, which I know, Ryan, you're going to jump in and say Peyton
beat that.
Yeah, Peyton.
Just a year later.
Yeah, and look, Joe Montana, I want to talk about stats. Well, then Joe Montana's best season, he threw for 31 touchdowns. Brady averages 31 touchdowns a season. So for me, Joe Montana was the GOAT until Tom Brady also won four. And then the fact that Tom Brady has an extra ring, it just it blows him out of the water.
And let me just get in on why I don't believe Joe is the greatest quarterback of all time. Joe is a great quarterback, but my issue with Joe is that the quarterback position back then isn't so much what it is now in the years that we saw Tom and Peyton. Back then, you didn't really, you didn't need your quarterback to go out there and carry a team, and you didn't need him to do all that because it was more of a running style offense, more of a running league, if you will.
And defenses and were heavily built to stop the run.
So in that aspect, when you look at stat-wise, Joe doesn't come close to our guys. And then you look at when Joe leaves and they have Steve Young, and Steve Young just goes on and does his own thing and becomes a Hall of Fame quarterback himself and carries on that legacy that Joe once had. And to me, that if a guy can come in right after Joe and do basically what Joe did, then why is Joe the greatest?
Let's pump the brakes there. Steve Young, as great as he was, wasn't the guy that Joe was. And Ryan, you basically gave my argument right back to me the second you said your first sentence. Quarterbacks weren't needed as much then, but he still delivered to the table. Not only did Joe Montana leave, but he also went to another team and had an impact on another team significantly. Joe Montana did play under Bill Walsh, one of the greatest offensive minds in the NFL, but he also played under two other head coaches, two other systems. Not only did he have the greatest receiver of all time, but he also won before that greatest receiver of all time was even drafted by that team. You said that 4-0 for Tom Brady versus Montana doesn't mean much. How does 11-0 sound? Meaning zero picks in the Super Bowl. Meaning he shows up when it actually matters. Joe Montana was ice cold when it mattered. Not only that, but I don't remember any of you guys quarterbacks beating a team 55-10. Not at all.
Lost one of those games.
and what I'm saying is that Joe Montana, even though it wasn't a pass-first league, he still delivered. So what would he have done if it was a pass-first league?
We never know. That's kind of what I'm saying, though. What would he have done if defenses were built like in today's football where they're all built around the pass?
Okay, but
you know, in today's game, it's all about those corners, the safeties, how to confuse the quarterback and play again. It's really defense against the quarterback more than anything else. And back in the day, it was more the run game. You know, it was run heavy, pound the football. That's why I feel like, yeah, he was great. He changed the game for quarterback. He was 100%. That first one. You know, he was that first. Like he's the original GOAT, if you want to say it. But now he's not the greatest of all time. He's the greatest of his time.
Glad you said that, Zach, because we don't agree very often when it comes to stuff like this. But
especially not in this debate.
I mean, Joe is great, and I love my sports history just as much as the next guy, and including Nate, because Nate, like we said, Nate's an old soul and a young body, but at some point, we got to let go of the past and realize that the game has developed, and the defenses have developed, and the talent that you're playing against has developed, and to do what Joe did, if not better, in a more difficult time, just, to me, just puts Joe as not the greatest of all time. All
right, so let's flip the narrative. Let's not put it against Joe. Let's look at someone like Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning, out of all three quarterbacks, has the worst passing rating in the playoffs, the worst postseason record. He has the worst record when it comes to regular seasons. So where does he put in that? If you're in a pass-first league and you still can't do what the other guy did before you, how does that make you a better quarterback than him?
I'm just going to put this out right now. For me, it goes Brady number one, Joe Montana number two, and Manning number three.
And I'm just going to go ahead and say that me, it's Peyton number one, Tom number two, and Joe number three. And Nate, before I get on to my Peyton points, just a rebuttal, go ahead and what's your top three?
My top three would definitely be Joe Montana number one, the deflator on number two, and the insurance guy number three.
Fair. So now, just to reiterate what you're saying Peyton Manning doesn't have as many wins, and he has more losses and all this in the playoffs. Wins are team sport. Like you need a team to win in the NFL. And when you talk about teams, Peyton Manning didn't have them. He never had great teams. He didn't have a defense to help him out like Brady has had throughout his career and like Joe has had throughout his career. He never had good running games. He had one in his season. And it's a coaching carousel. And I've sort of disregarded, folks, I've disregarded Joe in my mind throughout the time. And to me, it's a Brady and Peyton debate. So I'm gonna start talking more Brady and Peyton right now. If you look at the coaching carousel that Peyton Manning has had to deal with, he's had five different head coaches in his career and five different offensive coordinators, whereas Brady has had three different offensive coordinators and only one head coach who, just so happens to be the greatest head coach of all time.
Coincidence.
And when we're talking about wins, I mean, it's a team sport. And you look at the defensive help that they've had, and I've went back and I've done the research, and in his career, excuse me, Peyton Manning has only had a top 10 defense seven times. Only seven times. And of those seven times, only four times were they top five in the NFL. This is total defense right now. And then you go to Brady's side of the ball, and he's been in the league for how long now, Zach?
17 years.
17 years? Of those 17, he's had 12 top 10 defenses. And of those 12 top 10 defenses, eight of them were top five. And then you look at what else can help a quarterback other than a great defense? Well, a run game, wouldn't you say, Nate?
Absolutely.
And how many times has Peyton Manning had a top 10 rushing offense in his career?
Very few.
If you had to guess, give me a number. If you had to guess.
Two.
One. He's had one season with a top 10 rushing offense, and Brady has had seven.
Okay.
Seven times.
Okay, but let me point this out, because your argument, and the one thing I'll give to Peyton Manning, stats-wise, he does beat Tom Brady.
And is that not an individual accomplishment?
Well, is it? Because is he throwing and catching the ball himself? Because when I look at this, he had, look at that. And Manning won two Super Bowls. In his first one, he had two Pro Bowl receivers. Yep. In the second one, he had one. Mm-hmm. Brady, in all his Super Bowls, he's had one Pro Bowl receiver. And that was his first year.
Are we including tight ends?
No, and then that's what I was going to say. All right. And then you can add Rob Gronkowski for the one against Seattle, but he still won the year after without Gronk against the Atlanta Falcons. So, and then after that, you look at that. Who's Manning throwing to? He's throwing to Reggie Wayne and Marvin Harrison, who count for 33% of Manning's touchdowns. One third of his touchdowns are going to these two guys, who I believe are both going to be in the Hall of Fame. And not only
one
that.
One of them already is. Marvin's already in there.
Exactly. So, and another thing. What helps a quarterback to throw? Protection. Time to throw. And when I look at this, I see that Tom Brady, in his 17-year career, he's been sacked. In 16 seasons, Tom Brady's been sacked 452 times. Manning, in 17 seasons, so even more seasons, he's been sacked 303 times. So we're talking about a running game, and we're talking about a defense, but when we talk about Manning has better stats, Manning had a way better O-line and way better receivers his whole career.
And my question is, despite you guys putting up very good arguments, where does clutchness come into this conversation?
Ooh, and I'm glad you brought that up.
Real, that's a
yeah,
where
I'm glad
do you
both
come
you
in
brought
time,
that up.
Where do you come in time when you're needed the most? Because quite frankly, when it comes to Tom Brady's Super Bowls, there's a lot of moments where he wasn't the one that was clutch.
What the Tom Brady has out of five, four of them were fourth quarter comebacks.
Okay, but let
I don't
me just
know
say
what
this.
What else is the definition of clutch than coming back in the fourth quarter in the Super Bowl.
And that's fair. And that's fair. But we're talking about in the Super Bowl. But again, it takes a team to get to the Super Bowl. So the fact that he's there and he did it, good for him. But we're talking about clutch. What's the most clutch stat in the NFL? Game-winning drives. Is it not? And who has the most game-winning drives ever? Well, folks, his name is Peyton Manning. And he has 54 of them compared to 42 for Tom Brady and 28 for Joe Montana.
But when is the most clutch moment?
Say
the playoffs.
28.
28.
But when is the most clutch moments in the playoffs? And you want to talk about, again, I'm hitting on Manning's regular season stats. And let me repeat, regular season. Manning, for most of his career, he played indoors in Indianapolis. Brady played in windy, snowy Foxborough, Massachusetts. So that's another thing. And Manning, he's actually in the top 10 of most interceptions all time with 252. Tom Brady has 160.
Still, it's about the ratio though, because he still has 539 touchdown passes.
But
so if you look at that ratio, which is the best ever, you can throw a little more if you're throwing a little more touchdowns.
But top 10 most interceptions.
But I like what Nate brought up about why does Brady get that credit for the clutchness, and because
always baffles
because you talk about every time you talk about a win in Patriots history. Oh my God, Tom Brady's the greatest. Tom Brady got all these wins, but Was it not that Patriots defense that held the greatest show on turf led offense to 17 points in the Super Bowl?
It was.
And how
was
did
was it? Hold on, once give me a second. Was it not that Patriots defense that held Philadelphia to only 21 points in their third title?
Yes, it was.
What was it not Malcolm Butler who got a game winning interception to seal that game?
You better believe it.
Is that not three of the five of his Super Bowls? That's three.
Okay, but what did Tom Brady do in those games? And look, the first game. That's the only one where Tom Brady was held to less than 200 yards. And at the end of the day, it was still better than Manning's last Super Bowl as a 39-year-old. Because if you want to compare, Manning was 56%, 141 yards, no touchdowns and interception. Brady was 59%, 145 yards, a touchdown. And want to talk about clutch? Tom Brady came back in that game to win the game as his first year starting. And look, and another thing, everybody's so high on the fact that Nick Foles won as a backup quarterback. But you know who's the last guy who did that? Tom Brady, because Drew Bledsoe started that season and then got injured. Tom Brady jumped in as a backup and led that team to a Super Bowl.
I have 2 points. Just Nate, I know you want to say something right after this, so right when I'm done. I just have 2 points just to touch on what Zach just said right now. You mentioned how he was better in that Super Bowl than Peyton was in his last Super Bowl win, but can we look at the playoffs as a whole in those 2 years? Because as a whole in those playoffs, Peyton Manning had 631 yards, 2 touchdowns, and an interception. Yeah, not too good in his last year. We all knew he was declining. Fine. Tom Brady, in that first Super Bowl, had 572 yards in the playoffs, less than Peyton Manning, 1 touchdown, less than Peyton Manning, and 1 interception.
But are we not comparing a guy? But this is Tom Brady in his first year starting. A sixth rounder that wasn't supposed to play came in, jumped in, and led his team to a Super Bowl. Now you're talking about Peyton Manning, who was already solidified as probably a Hall of Famer, going with one of the best defenses, well, hands down that year, the best defense in the league, and making it to a Super Bowl. So you're comparing a 39-year-old with a 22-year-old who was a sixth rounder and not supposed ever to win a Super Bowl.
Might I add, that first Super Bowl run for Tom Brady was given gift wrapped. He wasn't even supposed to be there because the tuck rule wasn't even a thing. The thing, they made the rule up in the middle of the game in order to gift wrap to him. And he didn't even score the last points of the game. Adam Vinatieri did. 20. So that's a tuck rule and referee help. Adam Vinatieri not only hit two other field goals clutch in Super Bowls. The one that he hit against Carolina, they weren't even supposed to be in that position. The only reason why New England was in that position for Adam Vinatieri himself to become clutch was because of a guy named John Casey. No one remembers him, but I'll tell you who he is. He was the kicker for the Carolina Panthers that kicked the ball out of bounds to give Patriots that field goal position in order for Vinatieri to do it.
But Tom Brady does not control that. What does Tom Brady control? He controls putting the Patriots in a situation where they can win the game, which is putting them in field goal position.
But in the best game, you need to be the best.
What does the kicker do every single day? He kicks the ball.
It's not about being mediocre in the best game. It's about being the best in the best game. And that's why I'm going to go to Super Bowl 39, where Donovan McNabb was the only reason why you guys won that game. Donovan McNabb threw 3 interceptions. Tom Brady threw for a mere 236 yards. That's average at best. Not only that, let's go to Super Bowl 49, where the Seahawks were stupid enough not to give Marshawn Lynch the ball and instead throw it into the hands of Malcolm Butler.
Okay, but do people forget that right before that, Jermaine Kearse had one of these miracle catches where it hit a head, an elbow, a hand, whatever.
Sort of like that Edelman one against the Falcons?
Absolutely.
And why do the Patriots are not the only team to go 19-0 and win a Super Bowl? Because of the luckiest play of all time. And this is Eli Manning saying, quote, that the helmet catch was the luckiest play of all time.
And I don't disagree.
And that's another thing. And so imagine if we could have added that. That'd be 6 reigns and a perfect season.
First of all, let me just get this one off my chest. I'm so tired of hearing Brady this, Brady that. Can we just acknowledge that he's a system quarterback?
Bill Belichick.
And Peyton Manning was the system throughout his career. Like, just take this stat in for just a second. Just take this in and think about it, folks. Throughout his career, teams that Peyton Manning played on went 6-16 in games that he didn't take majority of the snaps or finish the game. Meanwhile, since Tom Brady became the starter for the Patriots in 2001 because he wasn't good enough as a rookie coming out of college, Bill Belichick teams have gone 14-5. 14-5 in games that he didn't take the majority of the snaps in the game or finish the game. Let's not forget that the Patriots won the AFC Championship game against the Steelers in 01 when Brady got hurt and Drew Bledsoe had to come back in and play that game.
And who'd Bill Belichick pick then, to be the guy in the Super Bowl?
And then what happened in 2008? Brady didn't play that season, and they went 11-5 with Matt Castle.
Okay,
When Matt Castle got a huge contract offer because they thought he was such a great quarterback from whoever it was after KC, I think, he couldn't do anything because it's a system. Everybody succeeds in the Bill Belichick system.
Let me answer to this system thing that everybody says Tom Brady is a system quarterback. First of all, yes, Tom Brady is with the greatest coach of all time in Bill Belichick. But Bill Belichick is a defensive-minded head coach. He's not an offensive-minded head coach. The thing Bill Belichick does on offense is he'll say, yes, let's go for it on fourth down, or yes, let's kick a field goal, or let's go for the two-pointer. So that's what Bill does. And you want to talk about a system? Who does the system? The offensive coordinator. In Brady's first three Super Bowls, the offensive coordinator was Charlie Weiss. In Brady's last two, it was Josh McDaniels. Not the same offensive coordinator, not the same system. And then again, I know you were going to talk about this 11-5 with Matt Castle, but look at the roster they had. The year before, the Patriots were perfect. They did not lose a game in the regular season a year before. And then that same roster, Matt Castle, yeah, he went 11-5, but he still couldn't win the division. And look, you want to talk about Bill?
Just one second. Look at that roster. Look at all the rosters that Bill has given Tom. I'm not saying Matt Castle's a better quarterback than Tom Brady. Oh, heck no. But Tom Brady does much better and puts up much better seasons and gets to the playoffs because he's a very, very darn good quarterback. But he is not, and I repeat, he's not the greatest of all time.
No, he's okay, not. First of all, the fact that it's one against two and it's like Manning against Brady and Montana against Brady just shows me that Brady is unanimous because everybody's trying to prove why Brady is not the GOAT. That just tells us that unanimously he is the GOAT.
Reason why, though, is because Brady's the only one that is still playing today.
That's another point. He's not even done. That's the crazy thing. But Tom Brady isn't even done. And look, you're saying that Bill Belichick gave him all these tools, but Bill Belichick built defenses. He built great
defenses. Oh boy, do they win championships.
Defenses help, but Tom Brady wasn't throwing no Pro Bowlers. The one time he had a Hall of Famer was Randy Moss. He had him for basically an hour, and look at what he did with that. And then you want to talk about Bill Belichick. Let's see who was Bill Belichick without Tom Brady. Bill Belichick was not even winning with Drew Bledsoe. He only once did Bill Belichick have a winning season before he had Tom Brady. And look, Bill Belichick with Tom Brady is 223 wins and 65 losses. That's 77% winning percentage. Bill Belichick without Tom Brady is 41-55. He's 42% winning percentage without Tom Brady.
So you're comparing the beginning of Bill's career when he was a rookie coach and really didn't know much about the game.
What else do we have? That's all we have. Look, if he's the greatest coach of all time, why couldn't he do anything before? Why couldn't he have more than one winning season before? He was going 6-10, 7-9 year after year after year. And then after that, he got the Patriots, his first year with Bledsoe, losing season again. And then they weren't even doing that well. They certainly weren't going to the playoffs if it weren't for Bledsoe getting injured and Tom Brady stepping in. And Tom Brady was not supposed to be that guy. No one expected that from Tom Brady, but that's why that's why he's the GOAT, because he came
that's
here.
That's where I have
and
an that's issue why, with this argument. Because no one expects any Patriot quarterback to do anything, but somehow, some way, they all do. And who's the common denominator? Bill Belichick.
Bill Belichick is 41.
Matt Castle, Jimmy Garoppolo, Jacoby Brissett.
Half of the time without Tom Brady, he does not even win.
They all had success with Belichick. They all went on to have careers elsewhere because of the success they had with Bill Belichick. Someone like Joe Montana, I can sit here and say, has won 4 Super Bowls in the span of 9 years. That is one Super Bowl almost every other year. Tom Brady won his first 4 championships in 14 years. It's an elongated process, and it's a process that even Tom Brady doesn't deny. In 2017, Tom Brady was on record when asked if he saw himself surpassing Joe Montana and said, and quote, "I don't agree with that. I tell you what, And he says, I don't agree with that, and I'll tell you why. I know myself as a player. I'm really a product of what I've been around, who I was coached by, and who I played against in the era I was in. So let's not negate the era.
Sounds okay. Like saying, hey, okay. I'm a system
so what
guy
I
to me.
Sound what I hear from that is humble. Hey, it's humble. Not me. It's not me.
What I'm getting from this is a big slice of humble pie. That's all it is. Because where did Tom Brady grow up? In the Bay Area. Who did he watch play all his life? Joe Montana. He's not going to admit that his childhood hero, that he's better than him. You know what you guys would be saying right now? If he would have said anything different, everybody would hate him even more because they'd say, He's cocky. He is a cocky guy. He just said that he's giving credit to everybody around him
because he knows it's true.
Okay, but wait,
he knows it's true. Let's see the rest of this statement. The rest of this statement goes on to say, and I quote: "So I've been very fortunate. I don't ever want to be the weak link. But right before that, he goes on and says, I really believe." If a lot of people were in my shoes, they could accomplish the same kind of things.
And you know what? Let me just go out and say, if Peyton Manning was given Bill Belichick, if Peyton Manning was given all these top 10 defenses and all these top 10 rushing offenses, he would have done way more.
What would have Tom Brady
Peyton
done?
Manning carries
Tom Brady would have all those records that Manning has right now if he would have been thrown to two Hall of Fame receivers most of his
Deion
career.
Deion Branch was Super Bowl MVP. So you're not going to act like if you're not a good
he
receiver,
wasn't even
you're not
a Pro
winning
Bowl.
Super Bowl
he
was, MVP.
He didn't even make the Pro Bowl.
Okay, and then you have arguably the greatest tight end of all time.
Who's always injured.
It
and Tom Brady
matter.
Won.
He plays. He plays more often than not.
Did they not win a Super Bowl without Rob Gronkowski?
Does it just so happen that in his greatest season he had arguably the greatest receiver of all time?
Nope. Not a coincidence.
Exactly. Peyton Manning he's dragged four different head coaches to four Super Bowls. And I know you're going to say, oh, well, he's only won two of them. Fine. He's only won two of them. But
exactly.
You know how hard it is to take four different coaches, four different systems, two different teams? To
what?
Super Bowls?
Because he only
to four Super Bowl appearances.
But what I'm saying is that realistically speaking, just like we're gonna knock someone like Tom Brady for using what he has, we can't sit there and turn a blind eye to Peyton Manning. Realistically speaking, so what? You have to show up.
Exactly.
Did he show up statistically? Yes. Did he show up in the regular season? Yes. So does someone like James Harden. We still knock him because he's not a postseason player. That's why he can't be looked at in the same limelight as someone like these players.
We can't compare basketball to football.
We're comparing athletes.
No, we're not, because when you're in basketball, you can play both ends of the floor. You can do all that. Peyton Manning can't control that his defense is just garbage. He can't control that he's on the sideline because his defense cannot get him off the field.
But he can control what he can, right?
And that's why the numbers are there. His statistics are there.
Tell me why the last season he played, he got benched halfway through the season
by
for
who?
Brock Osweiler.
And you know what?
Are you kidding me?
I have no... He declined in his last year. Sure, 2 years off a neck injury. He had one of the biggest declines.
And Brady's going in at 40 years old. After a year after Manning retired, Tom Brady has an MVP.
The one thing I think Tom Brady was greater at than Peyton Manning was staying in shape and eating nothing he enjoys so his body could stay right.
Yeah, he's not filling up on Papa John's.
And training with his boyfriend, Alex Guerrero.
He's not.
And wearing those Uggs and looking good. And sure, the pretty boy Tom, he did all of that. And I'll give him that. But Peyton Manning is the better quarterback. Don't you dare tell me otherwise. Don't give me the ring argument, because that takes a team, that takes a great coach, and Manning didn't have those things. How have we not talked about that little asterisk next to Tom Brady's name, which is cheating?
Because it has never been proven.
Can we talk about that for a second?
I knew this was going to come.
Can we just talk about that? Because as much as you don't want to admit it, and as much as Patriots fans are going to say, like, oh yeah, you bring up cheating because you're a hater. No, I bring up cheating because that takes away from the sport, and that takes away from what you do. So I'm sorry, folks, but there's no doubt in my mind that Brady was the mastermind that orchestrated Deflategate. And
what?
If you go, hold on one second, if you go ahead and tell me that, yo, he would have won even if the balls were inflated. Yeah, they would have, sure. But guess what? The balls were deflated, which is a violation of a rule, which is cheating. And if he didn't do it, then why did he not want to show his text messages? Why did he smash his cell phone and was so unwilling to cooperate with the authorities and the investigation? You tell me that
because
Tom didn't cheat.
Okay, let me answer that. First of all, Deflategate all began with a lie. Because What happened? Let's go through Deflategate. How did that happen? First of all, the Patriots are already slapping the Colts.
Sure.
And most of their touchdowns are by the run.
Fair.
So, and then there's an interception where a player apparently said that the ball is soft. And that's when the investigation started.
Fair enough.
And this same player, last Super Bowl, was interviewed and asked...
I saw that.
Yep, and was asked, so how did this all start? And he said, I don't have the exact quote, I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, I never thought the ball was soft. And throughout the whole investigation, no one came to see me and asked me anything about anything. So the whole Deflategate was staged.
But they tested those balls and they were deflated. They were under what league rules were.
By how much?
And 100%. If you're cheating, you're cheating. I don't care if you deflated it by whatever, 10 pounds.
Do you know how many times it's been proven that balls just deflate? You know how many times it's been proven after that, just throughout a game, the balls deflated? They weren't significantly deflated. There was one out of 12. All the other ones were like by 0.1 to 0.3.
Did they test the Colts ball?
They should have tested the Colts ball, because now we'll never know if it was natural. See, because if the test the Colts ball and compare both. Why don't you want to compare both? Why aren't you asking the guy who said in the first place, apparently, that the ball was deflated? The whole Deflategate started as a lie. The whole Deflategate was prepared, and Deflategate was happening before that game started.
And let me steer this back on track, because right now we're getting into a whole bunch of different scenarios and hearsay, you know, he say, she say, and that's a lot of stuff that we can and can't argue.
And we have 2 minutes left.
But what I want to end up saying is that realistically, we're taking away from the fact that people showed up when people were asked to show up. When your number gets called, you got to play. And when I'm looking at these passer ratings right now in playoff postseason history, I'm looking at times where people were asked to step up and they were expected to show up. And what I'm looking at is a 87.4 passer rating by Peyton Manning, and a 90.9 by Tom Brady, and a sixth all-time 95.6 by Joe Montana. Not only that, but you got to play against who you got to play against, right? But I'm looking at the people that he had to play against. And Zach, I know you hate this argument, but it's facts. Sometimes you have to look at quarterback versus quarterback. Sometimes Brady
why?
Beat.
Why? Why? Because is it a throwing competition?
Because it plays a factor. I'm looking at this and I'm seeing that not only were they playing, like, look who Tom Brady played against in the Super Bowl. Is anybody really going to care about Jake DeLome?
Nope.
No one. Is anybody going to care
Matt
about
Ryan,
Russell
who was
Wilson
the reigning
in the
MVP?
Of a series? Nope. No. Reigning MVP. Thank you. That's exactly what I wanted to hear come out of your mouth. Because if we're talking about reigning MVPs, not only that, but Joe Montana, out of his 4 Super Bowl wins, 3 of them were against the reigning MVP of that year. Ken Anderson,
the reigning MVP never won a Super Bowl. As a quarterback, the reigning MVP never won a Super Bowl that year.
Ken Anderson in 1981, Super Bowl MVP, lost. To who? Joe Montana. I'm looking at Dan Marino, probably one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, if he won rings. But who did he lose to in 1984? Joe Montana.
Right,
Boomer. Someone that we all listen to and we all think is absolutely credible because he's a great offensive mind. In 1988, who did he lose to? Joe Montana. And now I'm looking at John Elway, the great John Elway. In 1989, the year right after, who did he get wiped by? And I mean wiped by. Joe Montana. So I'm hearing you guys' argument, but at the end of the day, it's when it matters and when your number's called. Not only that, but he went to Kansas City and turned the franchise around with only one other Hall of Famer that was ever on the roster the same time as him. On the offensive ball, Marcus Allen. Period.
Okay.
Joe Montana, greatest quarterback of all time.
Look,
you guys can't tell me anything.
Look, you want to talk about who they played against. And at the end of the day, it's not a throwing competition. They're not side to side throwing in on targets, whatever. It's not quarterback against quarterback.
I'm with Zach on that.
It's defensive planning against the quarterback. And you want to talk about defenses planning against a quarterback? When the Seattle Seahawks planned against Peyton Manning and the Broncos, they won, which is one of the biggest blowouts in Super Bowl history, 43-8. The next year, with the exact same team, the Seattle Seahawks got beat by the New England Patriots.
But
so,
if you're gonna look at
so, if
it
weren't for Jermaine Kearse, that series would have never happened. And at the end of the day, we're not here to argue if
Jermaine Kearse is the greatest receiver.
But we're looking at Peyton Manning talking about he didn't show up, this, that, or whatever. He was absolutely garbage in the Super Bowl. Why is it that we're sitting here talking about Peyton Manning, a guy who has 2 Super Bowl
rings? Pizza guy?
He has just as many interceptions as Super Bowl rings, and he has one less touchdown thrown in a Super Bowl. He threw one touchdown in his Peyton Super Bowl
Manning?
Career.
You want to know why we're talking about Peyton Manning?
Because we have a Colts fan in the room.
Because like I said, a Super Bowl ring is a team accomplishment. He when you're threw talking one about the touchdown. Greatest of all time, you got to look at the body of work. And when you have the most MVPs ever, which means you were the best player most times than anybody in the league,
throwing
that
to
makes
Hall of
you
Famers.
The greatest.
Throwing
you,
to Hall of Famers, when but you he have, only threw one touchdown in the Super Bowl.
When you have the most – he has all the records. I'm not even going to list them all again. He has all the records. He has all the single-season accolades. He's number one. He's at the top of the list for all individual records, stats, all of that. Peyton Manning is my guy. He's not a system quarterback like Tom was. He wasn't in an era where all you had to do was run the ball and the defense has to play to run like Joe was. Peyton Manning carried teams. He was the system. Peyton Manning is the greatest quarterback to ever play the beautiful game of football.
And I think Peyton Manning carried his team halfway every year, year in, year out. There's no excuse that you say you have the greatest quarterback of all time and he's playing with Hall of Fame receivers and you only throw one touchdown in a Super Bowl. Absolutely ridiculous. Not to mention that his passer rating,
wait,
garbage.
Joe Montana's first Super Bowl, he only threw for one touchdown.
Absolutely. But he went there, and the second year, he threw for more than one touchdown. He threw for one touchdown in two games, and his passing rating was disgusting. I'm sitting here, and I'm telling you that Joe Montana is the great of all time above someone like Tom Brady, because Tom Brady essentially had gift-wrapped hand all over him. He was the little kid that got every little gift he wanted. Preach. Because every time something happened, went right, it just happened to be for Tom Brady. Whether it was coaching, whether it was refereeing, whether it was people making stupid decisions on the other end of the field. And what I'm telling you guys is that Joe Montana is the greatest quarterback of all time because he not only did it under one system, he did it with two systems in one team, and he turned it over and went to a different team and still turned them over as well.
Sounds like Peyton. And I'm not supposed to talk again because we're running out of time, folks, but I just want to touch on one thing that Nate said, and Zach was talking about it too, and how bad Peyton was in that last Super Bowl, and he only threw one touchdown. But you know what? The year after, they had, oh boy, did they have that same team with a different quarterback at the helm, and I don't even believe they made the playoffs. So we're not going to sit here and act like Peyton didn't have anything to do with that success.
All right, we got to wrap this up, but at the end of the day, you want to don't tell me about system quarterback if you're talking about Joe Montana with the greatest offensive mind coach of all time, and he's throwing to the GOAT, and then the other guy next to you, Nate, his guy was throwing to Hall of Fame receivers and had Pro Bowlers in all his Super Bowls. Tom Brady had a Pro Bowl receiver 4-1, and at the end of the day, Tom Brady is the GOAT. He did not. Manning is all about the stats, but it's easy to have stats when you have protection. A way better O-line than Tom Brady, and when you have way better receivers than Tom Brady. Tom Brady created these receivers that he had. Folks, our time is up. We could talk about this for hours and hours, but this was The Huddle on CJMQ 88.9 The Cube.